Jacob had another escapade today. He had to test the boundaries of the new laws, and probably also of Powell. But what I discerned happened, and the reason that he did and exploded the way he did, was that he discerned at a level not conscious that Powell was afraid of him. And then it caused me to recognize how many adults are afraid of children. And once you're afraid of them, then they recognize that at a level that's far below their consciousness, and they become, in effect, your covering. And it's ultimate evil. Now, the way in which you manifest the fact that you're afraid of them is by treating them delicately, i.e., that you're afraid that you will make a mistake in raising them or in being with them in some aspect. The moment that is perceived, and if, especially if it's a sustained perception, they've bought you, they own you. And that's happened with every one of the kids in the group. When Powell recognized it, I was much more direct with him, and I told him that Jillian owned him. I mean, he just started crying. But Jacob owns Larry, not so much you.
I've really thought about that every time a new thing comes up, because I'm always the hard guy, because there are just lines, you know.
And
I've thought about that, and I've had to figure out what it was.
It's fear. Angela owns both of you.
We talked about this the other night. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, we know who owns who in your family. I mean, but it's got to be dealt with because it's sin. And it's the reason the children are acting as if they're in control. Now, children from the earliest age will sense that fear the same way an animal does. And the way they sense the fear is kind of interesting. If you cannot play with them, they know you're afraid of them. If you cannot kid with them, they know you're afraid of them. Pete's terrified of the kids.
Does it originate in something that you can't quite...
The issue is that you could do something right. And so you are in righteous concern about, well, I'm afraid I'm going to hurt the child, or I'm afraid they're going to grow up wrong. And they got you. They got you.
Well, you're afraid that I'm going to hurt the kids.
Huh? Well, I'm afraid that a lot of you will hurt the kids.
I think with Angie, it's like, because she doesn't, it doesn't bother her, conflict does not bother her a bit, that's where she's got it. I mean, because she will go the limit with it, and I just, you know, I would really rather not get into those knockdown, drag-out things.
But it's the same principle as if when you... It's interesting. It's the principle of the it's the plastic seat cover principle. You buy a brand new car with great velvet seat covers, and then you put plastic on it. Well, that's what you do with the kids. You're afraid you will damage the kids, and so you put plastic on them. And it stinks. It's sick. It's got to stop. Because what it manifests itself in a wild way is that the child's covering is very narrow. It's just a little bitty narrow, like 2x4, as a covering. And the moment they go outside of that covering, they panic. And that's what happens with Jacob. Jacob's covering is about 1 inch wide. And the moment he goes outside the covering, he panics. And what will cause him to panic is if he perceives that you, or whoever the teacher is, or whoever is dealing with him, is afraid of him. Now, you're afraid of him. What I want you to know is, and there isn't, I mean, all of you are afraid of him at some level. What I want you to know is that fear has served its purpose. We must, as a body, put the fear of the children behind us. Do you understand? Now, if you don't clearly understand what I'm talking about, let's talk. Do you want?
I need to talk. No, I know what you're talking about. I need to see where, you know, how.
If you think you can make a mistake, they own you.
What if you perceive though that they're stronger than you? How can you abandon that?
If you
approve, I mean, if you perceive that that person is stronger, okay, even though they're a child.
I think they're stronger than you individually, but not stronger than us.
Yeah.
And by yourself, you'll get whipped.
Well, I know.
When I was growing up, when I was a little kid, I never knew what was going on, but I always felt it. I always felt that people were afraid of me.
Fancy that.
Well, but it didn't make any sense. It made no sense to me. I knew my father was afraid of me. My mother was about half the time. And it was like it caused me to be anchorless. It caused me to be without covering. It caused me to be, I'm not saying God made any mistakes. It was necessary that I go this route. But it provided me with this illusion that my mind was my covering. That my mind was my protection. What is your protection? What is your illusion? Now, that's what... And now we have to go back to the kids. I mean, what illusion are the kids coming up with if they feel uncovered? Because you cannot exist without a covering. And so what they do is they create another covering, or they imagine a covering that becomes their refuge of lies. That's what the purpose of the hail is in the spirit, is to destroy your refuge of lies. About covering, because that's what it's about. That's what the... Now, for me, it took a long time to destroy my illusion of a covering. But each one of those children, if they perceive in you fear, then they have to, by nature, invent some other covering. It could be their looks, athletic ability, their rebellion, in itself, intelligence. I mean, you understand what I'm saying? Whatever the millions of possible coverings are. And what we must do as a body, now, the only thing...
Talk about a right covering, if it's in order. What is
it? I'm not... This sounds weird to you, but, I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I'm the only one that I know of that isn't afraid of the kids. And therefore, I can stick my tongue out at them. I can encourage them to rebel against you, yet I can be the hardest ass they've ever dreamed of. I mean, I can be all things. I don't have to. I can. There's nothing that I'm afraid of being with the kids. I have, because I am, I mean, I know that I can't do anything positive or negative to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the closest, that's probably, I mean, this just sounds weird. I hope it's, if anybody's listening on tape, I hope it doesn't sound too weird, but I'm the only one that I know of in the body that isn't afraid of at least one of the kids.
So is fear what destroys covering your ability to cover anybody?
Yeah. It's your own, this is the righteous fear, you see. I mean, this is the one that really sucks you. It's the one that says, I'm afraid I'm going to be able to hurt them or do something wrong. Or I'm not going to be a good parent. Or
they won't like me.
Or they won't, you know, whatever. All of those stupid ones that are, they're coming at it from the opposite direction. And it's just, it sounds real sincere and heartfelt, and everybody in the world will say it's the right thing to think. Men will speak well unto you when you do good unto yourself or yours. You understand that in the Psalms, remember? Everybody will think that you're doing the right thing. But it's, you're falling right into the trap of the god of this world.
I blanked out a minute. Everyone will think you're doing the right thing when you do what?
Well unto yourself or yours, i.e. when you think that you've got, you know...
Oh, yeah.
You consider them and make them do all the right things, and you're put on a different face.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we talked a lot about faces with Angela last night, and we talked about she only has three different faces. She has a face with you upstairs, she has a face at school with her friends, and she has a face here. And I said, well, which face do you want? I mean, which is the real, will a real Angela please stand up kind of stuff, isn't it? And this is the face she wants here. And she hates the other faces. She hates the face she puts on with you. She hates the face she puts on at school. So I said, can you believe, I mean, she's 13 years old or whatever. I mean, it's incredible.
And when asked why, she said, because it's on her back. Hey,
yeah. But anyway,
this thing about being afraid of the kids, there's a moment there where the decision is my life or their life.
No, it isn't. Never.
I'm talking about the wrong. It's like that's what the fear is. The fear is I'm going to do something wrong. Because the fear is I've got to protect myself.
Yeah. The idea. Well, that's what you're saying. Do you understand this at the bottom level when you're saying, I'm afraid I'm going to do something wrong. What you're saying to God is, I have to protect myself. You're seeking your own when you say, I'm afraid I'm going to do something wrong. It's the most self-righteous thing there is in the universe. It's the epitome of self-justification, and it's the highest order of sin. It's like, and it sounds so good coming out of your mouth. Until you see that it's evil. Once you see, and it can never happen again.
Yeah. That's what happened at the dinner table tonight. We brought up the subject of the kids. I didn't say what was there to say because I thought, oh shit, I might say the wrong thing and then I'll end up getting yelled at by them.
Yeah.
But it wasn't any concern for you. It was, I might say the wrong thing.
Now, I want to make sure, especially the parents, I want to make sure you understand it. So I want you to give me each an example of where you're afraid of one of the children, all of you.
Well, I mean, the thing that it comes to my mind is with Johnny, because, I mean, this is what we talked about the other night. There are these times when, you know, I just completely forget what his needs are to be, you know, wept into line, just, you know, pressed into a place, and, you know, it's just a sloth thing, just slough off.
So you
for my own, you know, like for my own benefit.
Yeah, I understand.
You know, and so it's, or just, you know,
or he's not loving you anymore.
And then he's, you know, he's left out there to think up all these weird things of what's.
Yeah, he has to invent his own covering.
So, yeah.
And many times, their own covering becomes pure fantasy. It becomes, they create an alternate universe. That's why, you know, again, that's why everything in the world helps that. You know, that's all that's happening in the world with television and movies and all that. It's all an attempt to create a false covering. Okay, you understand? Can you understand your fear?
Yeah. Well, there's what we talked about at the dinner table. I mean, it's like I was always afraid of my own kids and afraid of Denise and afraid of all that stuff. But in the example, it's just interesting what happened today with Jacob. I don't think I'm very afraid of the kids that are in my class. And I'm not really conscious of being very afraid of them. But the thing with Jacob today happened, and you know, since I was the man there, I had to pick him up and take him. Take him down here to the cooler, and you know, I didn't use any more force than was necessary to pick him up and restrain him, but you know, he was down here, he was going, "You broke my ribs," you know, and going on and on, you know, "Oh, I can't breathe." Well, I didn't know, but see, I didn't know that he always did that, you know, and I was afraid that I'd hurt him. And he was going on.
Oh, he does that. He tried it on me. He tried it on me about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
He said, no. What he said to me was, "Oh, you broke my arm. You broke my arm."
No, I didn't hear.
And I said, "Jacob, let me have your other arm. I'll show you what it is to break it."
Yeah.
And he never tried that again.
He did the same thing. Found the same thing.
Well, Polly said, "You're going to kill me. I'm dying. You're killing me."
Too. Yeah, yeah. He said, "You tried to kill me. You tried to kill me."
But anyway, but your fear is more amorphous because.
Who are you talking about?
You.
Oh, I was afraid.
I mean. Do you understand something, that just because you get yelled at doesn't mean you've made a mistake? I mean, can anybody hear that, especially the Levites among us?
No.
No, we can't understand that.
I don't have that one.
Just because you get yelled at doesn't mean you've made a mistake.
Make me write sentences.
That's not true.
If you walk,
I don't have this one down yet.
If you walk on tiptoe so that I won't yell at you, then it, by definition, you'll end up afraid of everything. Who gives a shit whether I yell at you or not? I mean, what am I going to do?
Well, God, it's preferable.
Well, my point is, I mean, it's. Do you understand what you do? If it's like it's just the reverse of what you do to the kids. You're teaching them by your example. Their idea of a successful truce is, if I don't get yelled at. You're teaching them the opposite of what forgiveness is. By example. There's a reason why God makes rabbis evil. It's because if you're afraid of getting yelled at, that means that you will do anything, instead of walking in a state of forgiveness, you'll do anything to come up with an acceptable position of a truce. It's there to do you to do that to you as an adult, so you can see how you did it as a child. So you can see how your understanding of what forgiveness is so biased by not being yelled at. You understand that?
It's living for approval.
It's evil. It's saying peace, peace when there is no peace, so that you won't get yelled at, so you won't get your little feelings hurt. Well, fuck your little feelings. I'm not caring about your little feelings. You can't make a mistake. Get that in your head. It doesn't matter whether I yell at you or not. I'm not afraid if You know, I'm not afraid of you yelling at me. Why should you be afraid of... Well, you think that's funny? Why is that funny? Why is that funny?
I can't imagine you being afraid of us yelling.
That's why it's funny. I love you being afraid of us yelling.
Why? Well, I'm not afraid of anybody yelling at me.
That's why it's funny.
But why... What is different about the role? So what is different about...
I don't know. I don't know the answer to the question you're asking. I wish the hell I did.
Okay, this is the essence of what it means to be under a covering. And this is the reason what we're about here with regard to the children is so important. Perfected love has cast out all fear. When there's no more fear, that means you are covered. And your covering is as wide as the universe, as wide as time. Nothing can hurt you. You must know by now that I'm not going to try to hurt you. Kids know it.
We still care about our feelings.
But the kids know that sometimes I'm really bad at them. And then 5 minutes later, they're over sitting in my lap. I mean, they do that to all of us, but... I want you to see how your fear of the children is exactly the reason why you are afraid of me. If you can see that you have no reason to be afraid of the children, then you can see you have no reason to be afraid of me, or vice versa. If you can see that there is no benefit to being afraid of me, then you will no longer be afraid of the children. It's
a being a respecter of persons.
Yeah.
Two different directions.
Jessica and I had a real neat talk a couple weeks ago, and she came home and she said, you know, Mom, I feel like I can never get in trouble because then you'll yell at me. And then we talked about, and it, what was neat in me is it clicked in me the thing about, because that's always been my deal, I don't like to be yelled at. But something happened in that talking, because I told her, I said, no, I want you to go ahead and try stuff. So what if I yell? Does it mean I love you less? And it was like I was hearing myself saying this going, and it was like a light turn. It was really neat, and Jessica heard it. She understood it, and it was like she says, "Then I can try everything." I said, "You can try everything. Talk to me. Tell me what's going on, and you know, go for it."
That's why it was so neat to see Angela. Angela doesn't have any fear. You recognize that?
Yeah.
That's not the problem.
We certainly do recognize that.
A little fear wouldn't hurt.
Angela.
She's got nothing to be afraid of. That's what amazes me. Yeah.
And she's not afraid of the hot seat. Do you know that?
No. She's never been on one.
But she has heard. She has heard from everybody what a hot. Those kids have heard all kinds of stories about hot seats. Angela has absolutely no fear of the hot seat. Why? Because she knows that there is nothing in the world I would do to hurt her.
She can't perceive so much.
She cannot perceive the possibility that I'd be out to hurt her.
Better not.
Well, of course. No, I mean, better not. I mean, that's what God says to me. If I'm out to hurt any one of you.
I never thought of that.
Yeah, you know,
I never.
Cody has to answer to somebody.
But please see that the situation with the children is. Let's see the depth of the sin of being afraid of the children, and put it away. Divorce it. It's not necessary anymore. You can't make a mistake with them. Let them know. You know, like. I mean, this all came into being as a result of Angela's, the idea of how clearly I saw how the adults were afraid of the kids when I saw that Angela was without fear.
I don't get the connection.
Well.
That she ought to be afraid of something?
No. No, I'm. Well, it was. Let me put it another way. I saw it. It blossomed last night when she was sitting in that seat. And then today, when I saw the opposite, how that, in the weirdest sense, Powell was afraid of Jacob, and then I saw he's afraid of Jillian, you know, and then I saw how incredibly, totally, that Patty was afraid of Jillian. And it all gelled. I mean, I saw what it should be versus what it is. But anyway, I want us to see what covering truly is. Covering says, well, let me put it another way. Fear is fine. Fear is okay. Fear is like a little childish thing. When I was a child, I spake as a child, I thought as a child, I acted as a child. Okay, now we can put it away. You don't have to fear anymore. You don't have to fear the kids. You don't have to fear me. I mean, there's enough evidence. The evidence is abundantly clear, I think, that you don't have to fear the kids. I think it's also abundantly clear that you don't have to fear me. That means that you just because I yell at you doesn't mean you've made a mistake.
It's just like I was thinking of a drill sergeant who's constantly yelling at these guys, but they're all making good progress, you know? And it's like the yelling is part of the thing, and that's just a scrunched up few weeks version of time far as we're concerned with God, actually. You know?
Well, the reason that you can afford to discipline the children with consistency and with clarity, if you know you're not afraid of them. That's a biggie. If you're afraid of the kids, your discipline will be sporadic. It will be subjective. It will be all kinds of weird things. Non-effective. But the lesson that you have to learn if you're a parent right now is, you do not have the right to think you can make a mistake with regard to raising your children. If you can see that they are in God's hands, then you can be free to love them and be free to discipline them and be free not to be afraid of them. But you must confess it. If you don't, the reason confession, this is one of the confess fault one to another that you might be healed. You know, it's hard to describe what fear is.
Can I try?
But fundamentally, the source of fear is hunger. It's that you don't have the provisions to meet a particular need that is forthcoming, and the need could be instant, like you got, you know, somebody's got a gun at your head and you're afraid you're going to die, or it could be, you know, the fear of just general living, or sort of overall angst that some of you experience, or it could be, as we talked about, the fear of a child, that you don't have the provisions to meet that need. Now, fear doesn't have a time component. It's irrational with regard to time. In other words, you can fear something that rationality would say it makes no sense because it's way down the road, so you don't have to, you know, but you can still fear it. But fundamentally, it has to do with that you do not have the... It's a fear of hunger. That there will be a need that won't be met. Now, that fear can only be allayed by the peace offering. It is the only offering by which you will be sustained in all possible situations. Even as a child, because the priest's children are also covered. Even if you're just a child of the... I mean, there's no situation that you can come under in which the peace offering won't sustain you. If you're afraid of how you deal with the children as a parent, then the peace offering can sustain you. It can meet that need. You understand that? Or is it... have I jumped too far?
Well, you said, the family of the priests partake of some of this stuff too, right?
Right. The children of the priests and the friends of the children and the friends of the priests partake of the and the offer partake of the peace offering.
This is all tied into covering.
Well, it's tied into covering only to the extent that it's covering is one of the places you go if you're hungry.
And the kid is sustained by that simply by the right of relationship,
right.
Not belief, anything,
no.
Just because of the kid.
Right. And so is the unbelieving wife, or so is the unbelieving husband, but also so are the friends.
Again, regardless of state.
Right. The friends can eat at the table of the offerer, of the peace offering.
Yeah.
Now, therefore, you have a tremendous amount to give. It's like, If you could consume the offering, the peace offering, and it's all its variances and varieties, then by definition, you would be sustained in every possible condition that you may find yourself. You'd be sustained, therefore, by definition, you'd have to be without fear, because fear means there's a lack, or you suspect a lack. Now, how in the world can we make that? How can we get it? How can we get at that? How can I show you that there's no
lack?
There's no lack, that there's no, there should be no fear. I don't know. It's like, this is something that, like, I don't know that it's, I don't know how to teach about it, other than by example. I don't know how you can, I mean, we're going to get a bunch of little charts about peace offerings and varieties and all that kind of stuff, but it has to be more than just looking at it. It has to be somehow experienced. But it all has to be voluntary. There is no aspect of the peace offering that isn't voluntary. Now that there's a mystery involved in that, because the sin offering and the trespass offering aren't voluntary. They're requirements. So the voluntariness of the peace offering has to do with maturity. It probably, I think, as we've talked about, I think I mentioned it, that it probably cannot be offered until you've reached the young man state spiritually. You can't even understand the peace offering. As I said, it's the last offering that was given during the day. It's the last to be apprehended.
Before that, you're like the child of the priest who's just
doing right.
Something because of the priest, not because of
right.
Understanding.
Right. And you no matter how often that you are told that you should be without fear, you can't quite get there from here. Because you've been in that state by grace and not by experience. You know, I pray that because I have tasted of the peace offering that you have benefited these years. Now it's time for you to pull up a chair. We have a table to eat at, an altar to eat at. We have a food to eat that they, meaning everybody else, knows not of. We don't have to be sustained by their sustenance. Isaiah talks a great deal about don't fear what they fear. I promise you, if you are remember what Christ said. He said, you are there that justify yourselves among men, but God knows your hearts. Those things which are highly esteemed among men are an abomination unto God. Whatever, if what you're doing is trying to go after something that's highly esteemed among men, you know you're making a mistake. By the same token, if you're fearing what they are fearing, you know you're making a mistake. So if you have any common fear with the Gentiles, you know you're being deceived. If you have any common goals or ambitions with the Gentiles, you know you're being deceived. That's one of the things that really, that you know, if you say something to me and I know that it's something the world wants, I know you're full of shit. I mean, it's automatic. You know, and I call you on it and you think it's discernment. No, it's not. It's just that I know that the world likes it, and therefore I know it has to be full of shit, and therefore if I call you on it, you'll say, oh shit, he knows something.
Secrets of discernment.
Yeah.
And by the same token, if you fear something that everybody in the world fears, then I know that it's bullshit. We're not of that race. We're not of that kind. We're not of that kingdom. We're not of that food. We're not of that covering. We're not of that rest. We're not of that anything. Okay, do all of you understand a little bit about how, can all of you confess, let me put it that way, that you've been afraid of the children?
Yeah.
I'm sitting here thinking about how we've always talked about throwing your ideas of marriage out the window, and like, this is a person, this is not, you know, and but throwing the idea of parenting as a thing out the window.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's an illusion. You just respond to the kid as though you would, just like you would respond to anybody else.
The biggest thing is that you can't, it's like we talked about the other day, that you can't possibly understand or have the Sermon on the Mount mean anything unless it's in a community. You can't possibly raise children or have an understanding of what parenting is from the spiritual standpoint unless it's in community. There's no possible way it can make any sense. There's no possible way that what we know to be incredible revelatory things about a kid could be revealed except in community. You know, we have to be, the whole idea about forgiveness can only be meaningful and in a society that doesn't reward violence. Now, the society out there rewards violence, so it can't be any part of us. They reward the society out there rewards rugged individualism. It rewards flinging people aside. It rewards murder in that context. It rewards
oppression.
It rewards bribery. It rewards all of the things that we know are anathema. That's all of those things are violent in nature. the only way that the things that we've learned about forgiveness and no truces and the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes can make sense is in community. It forces us into a community. It has to take place. This book was written to force a body of people into community.
Trying to even understand it outside the community, it's just talking in the wind. It doesn't connect.
It's like Christ went through the three-year cycle 6 times. And then the 7th time he went through it with the disciples. And now, I hope we're the 8th time to go through it. That's the resurrection. To see that the resurrection is completed. Because as long as you're going through the 3-year cycle with a hope of something in the future, then you're still going back, you're still going through the 3-year cycle with Jesus Christ after the flesh. You understand? We must be about going through the 3-year cycle as though the resurrection is finished and the time is finished. So we are going through it the 8th time with him as resurrected. Now, that means that we have to have an attitude about, we have to have his attitude about every sensory perception that can come into our lives. That there's no sensory perception, there's no activity that can be revealed unto us that we don't see with the eyes of the Spirit, that we don't see from the top down. You can no longer view life from the bottom up. That's a luxury that left you when we on the first of Nisan. It wasn't a luxury anyway, it just seemed to be. Now you look at life from the bottom down. From the top down, excuse me. Good point.
Plus we forget blessing on Rabbi.
You understand? That's what going through the 3-year cycle the 8th time is. It's looking at all of our lives and everything that happens in them from the top down.
Sitting in the heavenly places.
Right. He says one little shitty thing that gets a blessing.
I can see that coming.
Yeah.
I'll sing. Don't bless me.
Please.
Please don't sing.
Thinking these things. Take it, big guy. I don't want to talk anymore.